I'm Peter Heemskoot. I work for UTU, and I'm going to talk about all the scary new stuff in Azure. Or do you say Azure? I still haven't got that. So what I want to talk about, first of all, is I want to give you an introduction of what is Azure for those people who haven't seen it yet. And then we're going to look at all the new things. So I'm going to try to make the introduction as short as possible. So what is Azure? What is the cloud? Well, the cloud is actually a whole bunch of servers all connected together, connected to the internet. And on top of that, there is some system running, some operating system running, and in Azure it's called a fabric, for handling all those machines. So Microsoft has several of these data centers with filled up with servers, and you can rent them. So what's in it for you? What's in it for you if you're maybe a manager? Well, first of all, with this system, you can just pay for what you use. Imagine you're a startup. You might need to make a heavy investment in a whole bunch of machines because your website might become very popular. Of course, this heavy investment, you don't want to do that. So what you can do is with Azure, you can just rent those machines and start deploying on one machine and then two and grow as you see fit. This also gives you the advantage that you can easily change how many machines you're using. If you want an extra machine or you need some less machines because there's a peak, there's some kind of, you saw Yelper. Anybody see Yelper? No. It's a Twitter clone built by a couple of people from Ghent. They were actually on the radio recently, Studio Brussels. So maybe this is going to go viral. Maybe this is going to become very popular, although they build it not for commercial purposes, they say themselves. Although I hope it's going to really pick off. But imagine it goes viral. So what they could then do is to just grow by just adding more and more machines. How much time does it take for you to add a new machine? Well, a lot of time. In the cloud, a couple of minutes. That's all. It also means you get better value for money because Microsoft, of course, buys machines by the thousands. And they're all of the same kind of stuff. They're all the same specs. If you buy thousands of machines, don't you get a nice discount? And if you buy electricity in bulk, don't you get a nice discount? So they can get that a lot cheaper. And this way we can, rent it cheaper too. By the way, I don't want to talk too much about money. Because after me, there's going to be a session all about reducing cost of building applications for the cloud. Because it's not just about taking your application, put it in the cloud. You can actually make the pricing quite different by optimizing certain things. And then finally, if you go to a new platform, typically you have to, train all your people into the new stuff. Azure actually allows you to use existing skills. So, for example, if you're an IT pro, what's in it for you? Azure will allow you to run your applications in a scalable and fault-tolerant way without you having to go through all the hassle of setting up machines and so on. All of that stuff is done for you. It's a lot easier to do deployment. It's a lot easier to manage. And it runs on what you know, Windows Server 2008 R2. And if you're a developer, again, Azure is a platform that makes it easier to build highly scalable, highly fault-tolerant applications. And I can do that with whatever you already are using. If you're into .NET, of course, Azure makes .NET. It's out of the box. It's easier that way. But if you want to, you can use PHP. Recently, there was a new toolkit released for PHP. If you want to use Java, you can do that too. Anything. It's completely open. So it allows you, as a developer, to focus more on developing your solution instead of thinking, if you have highly distributed applications, you have to think about distributed storage, fault handling, those things. That will all be done for you again. So, what is in Azure? I could say that Azure has three major components. Windows Azure, SQL Azure, and then something called the App Fabric. So, what is Azure? Azure consists of three different components. First of all, you have management. You can start, stop, increase the number of instances, whatever. You can do that using a UI, or you can just do that using your own APIs. Well, sorry, APIs from Microsoft. These are all REST APIs. So anybody can use REST. It's a very simple way to talk to machines. What we'll also find is compute and storage. Now, compute is the thing that's going to run your caller. So compute is a Windows Server 2008 R2 machine, 64-bit. By the way, if you want, you can still use the previous release, 2008 Service Pack 2. And on it, you will find .NET, .NET 3.5 or .NET 4. And you can just run your application on it, even with full trust if you want. And the App Fabric is going to help you and is going to start and stop for you those things. Now, what you'll find in there are different roles. You'll find a worker role, a web role, and now also a VM role, but that's for a little bit later. The web role is just you want to run a website. When people talk about the cloud, it's also always about websites. So you can just take your ASP.NET website and deploy it in the cloud. Why? There is a full IIS running there. So all the usual stuff you've been doing simply works. The only big difference is you'll need to, integrate a little bit better with Azure. So Azure can then easily start and stop your website for you if you want to do upgrades or you want to change configuration, those kind of things. But what you will also find is a worker role. The worker role is really, think of it as a Windows service. It's a little slave processor out there that can do things for you. And in Azure, many of the architectures that exist today are about distributing work over web roles and over worker roles. So what we're going to see there is we're going to have some communication. Now, typically, what you'll be running in a worker role is, for example, a WCF service. So if you want to go to the cloud, you need to learn a little bit about WCF. Okay. Now, let's have a look at storage. So what's in storage? Well, anytime you build a distributed application, you will have to think about distributing data. Because in Azure can always restart one of your machines. So you're not allowed to store any real persisted data on that machine. You can store things on the machine, you get that, but it's not guaranteed to survive. So what you want to do is you want to store things. So what we get is blobs, and blobs is a storage mechanism for huge things. You can store terabytes in there. By the way, Azure Storage, if you have an account, you get like 100 terabyte of storage if you want, and if you can afford it. You can also get tables. Tables is like entity storage. It's not a relational database. It's not a relational table. It is just a way to store your entities. You get drives. A drive is really a virtual disk, which is mounted as a blob. So automatically you get transparency there. But it makes it easy to migrate libraries you already have that just work with file systems. So instead of having to give them blobs, you can just give them files, and it will mimic everything as a drive. And finally, you get queues. Queuing is for worker web role communication, typically. So you have a web role, it receives something. You have a website, it receives an order. And then you want to check if the order is correct, if you have enough in stock, if the credit card is valid, and so on. You just hand it off to a worker role. The worker role can do that later. It doesn't have to be done immediately. By the way, what I can also tell you here is storage automatically will create 3 copies of each piece of your data. Automatically distributed, automatically safe. You don't have to think of doing backups or things like that. So the queuing mechanism, as you can see there, is a way to make those things talk to one another. So what we also get is something called the content delivery network. If you build a website and you want to show, think about YouTube movies. It's a lot more interesting if your movies are very close to your user. So what you can do is you can enable that all your blobs and all your data kind of gets distributed over a lot of data centers. Azure currently has 6 Azure data centers, but there are a lot more content delivery network data centers. You have to think of them as a duplication of data. So when somebody wants to view a movie, your website will automatically be redirected to the nearest server to download that movie, or whatever it is, or big bulk data. Now, I want to make one other thing very clear here. You can just as easily use all of the storage and all of the CDN from within your local Windows application. All of this is available, not just from within. It is the cloud, so anybody can use that. And later I'm going to show you that you could, for example, use it for your Windows phone to store stuff you want to keep. You don't want to keep it on the Windows phone itself. You want to store it. Well, you can quite easily do that with blob storage, for example. Next part. When Microsoft released Azure, there was no SQL database. And they got a lot of feedback saying, yeah, but we want to have relational storage. So what Microsoft did is just they took SQL Server and put it in the cloud. So SQL Azure is really SQL Server running in the cloud. And if I want to talk to that, I can just use, for example, SQL Management Studio. And here, this is my SQL Azure database running in the cloud. And I can just use usual tools. There are some limits, of course. Not everything from SQL Server already works in the cloud, but they're heavily working on that. So that's SQL Azure. And then we have the App Fabric. And again, the App Fabric, you can think of it as two different parts. First of all, we have the service bus. The service bus is about exposing local services on the internet. If you want to do that, you have to solve a whole bunch of nasty problems. Firewalls, NAT, those kind of things, dynamic IP addresses. How do you solve that? So the people at Microsoft said, hey, okay, we're going to do that. We're going to solve that once and for all. And what you do is you just have a service, for example, and if you use WCF, this becomes really easy. You just take a binding, a specific binding for the service bus, and that binding will talk automatically to the cloud, and it is going to tell the cloud where the service really is, and it's going to take care of all the nasty little things. Now, the service bus then is going to expose a public URI. And then anybody who wants to talk to your service, you just give them that public URI, and that public URI is constant. It's something you can choose yourself. So when they then go to that public URI, what's going to happen is the service bus is going to redirect it. It's going to tell your application where that is. And then the application can use that URI again to talk to your application. Or it could actually even, if you want to, directly communicate. So in some cases, you can set up direct communication. It makes it a lot more efficient. Okay. And then we have access control. Access control is really all about using claims-based security. Now, claims-based security, well, Vittorio Bertocci, he's coming today. He knows all about that, so I'm not going to elaborate too much on it. But the access control service makes it really easy to integrate existing identity providers, such as LiveID or Facebook or Google or things like that, And turn it into a claim for your website. So this way you can actually delegate the identity, who is this person, by using another mechanism. And what they also did is they worked very hard on creating a standard for using claims-based security with REST. If you have SOAP services, you can always have the claims hidden in the SOAP header. But with REST, you can't do that. So what you will find there is things like wrap tokens to enable claims-based security with REST services. Again, not going to go too deep into that. So, let's focus again on development. If you're a developer, you can just take all the skills you've done before and just use them. If you've built things with ASP.NET or WCF or Silverlight, you can use that. If you're not into .NET, you can still use that. And what you'll get if you install the tools is a complete personal cloud. So what you get is a compute emulator and a storage emulator. Yeah, these things used to be called the developer app fabric, but that was a little bit too confusing. App fabric here, app fabric there, all kinds of app fabrics. So they now call it the compute emulator and the storage emulator. And it allows you to just develop without having to have internet access on your cloud application, which can be handy if you're in the train or something. Okay. So let's focus on the real thing. What is new in Azure SDK? Originally, my session was called SDK 1.3. Now, since I did my proposal, now they have a new SDK 1.4. So I said, okay, let's include that one too. So, what's new? Well, first of all, they completely redesigned the management portal. The old one was a complete ASP.NET website with JavaScript and so on. But of course, now today we have Silverlight. And Silverlight makes these things easier to do. So they just completely rebuilt the portal and they're integrating everything into that. And let me show you what it looks like now. So what I can do is I can just go to Azure. And after logging in, I'm going to get this kind of screen. So what I'll get here is groupings where I can choose between different things. I can look at all the services I'm currently running in Azure, all my sites. I can look at storage. I can look at things like SQL Server if I want to. I can look at my database. There is even a database management tool in here. So if you don't have the SQL Management Studio, you could actually create here a database, fill it up. You can find all kinds of tools to work with this thing. So if I go here, for example, I can click on Manage. This is going to redirect me to the management portal. By the way, this was built by somebody with a little bit too much time on his or her hands, because once you're in here, you get this kind of cube-like experience. See? So somebody had a bit of too much time on their hands, I think. Okay. So, if I go back to the management portal, you can look at reporting. Reporting currently is in CTP, so if you want to try these things, you will have to actually ask for a caller to be able to access it. You get access to the service bus. Previously, you would actually have to use another website to get access to the service bus, and here you can do things like access control and, just work with the service bus. Okay, so all of these things quite easily reachable here, and in here I can then, for example, start and stop my services. I can do a VIP swap. I can change the operating system here. So one of the things they also make quite easy, if you're running this, you can then choose which operating system you want to run on. I'm not even going to attempt changing this, because, of course, if I do that, it's going to completely stop and start my whole thing, and then you're away for 15 minutes. Okay. So, new management portal. That was the wrong key to press. Now, I just showed you the web role and the worker role. Microsoft introduced also something new called the VM role. And this is basically, you have an existing system and you want to port it in the cloud. Now, what they allow you to do is to build your own virtual machine. In the cloud, it just runs virtual machines. And normally, Microsoft builds those for you. But what you can do is you can build your own virtual machine. And you just need to build a VHD, a virtual disk, containing Windows Server 2008 R2. You install anything you want on it additionally, anything you need. And then you also need to install the Azure integration components. Why? Well, again, then Azure can talk to your machine, stop and start it, and do all kinds of things to it. And then when you're ready with that, you just sysprep it and you upload it into Azure. And then you can start your own machine with your own VHD. Is that easy? Okay. What else? Well, in the first Azure edition, they were using something called a hosted web core, which is like IIS, but it's not through IIS. Now, with Azure 1.3, we get full IIS running in the cloud. And this means you can do all kind of nice new things now. For example, you can actually have multiple sites running in a single web role. So imagine you have a couple of small websites. You still want to use Azure. Well, instead of having to have an additional web role for each website, which costs more money, you can just now build everything and put it into one web role. And let me show you how easy that is. So what I'm going to do, just going to start a new Visual Studio. By the way, this is a great moment to show you how development works with Visual Studio now. It integrates quite nicely with 2010. So I'm going to create a new project. I'm going to create an Azure project. Let's just keep it. And let's call that multi-websites. Okay. Mm. Okay, that's multi-websites too, again. Shall teach me not to clean up my disk. So, what I can now do is I can select different web roles. I can select a web role. I can have an MVC2 web role that's supported out of the box, by the way. I can have a worker role. I can use a CGI web role for PHP or something. And yeah, what I've also done is I installed MVC3 templates, but this is a manual hack, so you probably won't have that. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to build a little website here, and I'm going to call this one the first one. No, I'm going to call it dummy. I want to show you. So when I do that, I'm just going to get the usual Azure project containing a website and my Azure project. Okay. Now, if I'm going to run this, what's going to happen? It's going to deploy this website, and I will have a role with just a single website. Now, I want to show you that in the configuration, we'll find this new sites node. Okay? So if I want to have multiple sites, I can actually copy-paste this kind of thing. So let's already do that. And let's add a couple of more sites. I'm going to call this one the first one. And then, of course, the second one. And I'm going to add a couple of sites now. So just add new web project. So let's create a, let's call this the first one. And I'm just going to leave it, except the first one. And I'm going to get a path to this. That's all I need. So I'm just going to use this thing to get the path to this site. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to tell this site that the physical directory where the site is here. Now, what does this mean? It simply means that when this project gets deployed into the cloud, it needs to get this directory and use that to create the first website. So this is local directory, but in the cloud it's going to look completely different. Now, what I can also do is create a second website. Let's add another one. The second. And again, I'm going to change this to say the second. And again, I'm going to get the address. And then go back to my definition file. And just copy that in here as well. Whoops. What did I do wrong? Okay. Now, will this work? Well, two websites all at the same address won't work, of course. So what I also need to do is I need to tell it a little bit more. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell it here that I'm going to use an additional host header to tell it that this is another website. And I'm using one of the popular ones from Microsoft. So if I'm going to run this, what will happen? It's going to create for me two websites, one which I'll be able to reach using the normal address, and the other one which I'll be able to use to reach using Contoso. Let's try this. We'll build the whole thing. And then first, I'm going to try to run it locally. Now, what it's now doing, it is now just taking my whole project, packaging it, and uploading it into the compute emulator. So this takes a little while. While this is starting, I can just as easily go and open up IIS. Why? The compute emulator actually just uses your local IIS to do all the emulation. Since in the cloud there is IIS running, you can use IIS locally to do the same thing. You can also use IIS Express, yeah. Come on. Yeah, I think they're both fighting over the same metabase here, but this one is starting, as you can see, the website. Here's my first site. And if I click here, what you will see is both sites get emulated in IIS. So what happens for each site, the emulator will just create an additional website in IIS. So I'm here at port 81. If I now want to talk to the second website, what I can do is I can go to Contoso. And normally this would work, but because I'm using the emulator, I now also have to give the port number, and now I get my second website. Now, if I upload this into the cloud, I can do exactly the same thing. So what I've done here is I have a site, this one, and there are three sites now. If I look at this, what you'll find is the first website, and then I can use another address to go to the other one, which is called PWE. By the way, if you really use this URI, you're going to end up on some artist's website. Okay? But this one allows me to use, I can easily test my second website. How do you test this, by the way? A little tip here. You just go into your hosts, and in host, you can then tell it, which address to delegate to. Now, if you want to test it locally, like my Contoso, I can just use the local address. And if I want to use this on the cloud, what I do is you just ping the cloud address, gives you an IP address, and then you just update this to point to that IP address. And this way you can easily test it. Of course, in real life, the next step would now be is to go to your DNS provider and change the CNAME, create a CNAME record to redirect your website to the cloud website, to cloud address. But as you can see, it's really easy to do this. Okay. Now, they did another thing. If you want to run your website, but you need additional components, you need additional libraries, you have to get them on the server. In SDK 1.3, they added full trust, admin rights to startup tasks. With the startup task, I can run anything I want on the server and set up components. And because we can now run those things elevated, I can install anything I want. How do you do that? Well, it's quite simple. Let's go here for another thing. What I'm going to do is create a new project again. Oops, it's still running. Create a new project. And again, I'm going to create a cloud project. And for this one, I'm not even going to add a site first. Oops. Come on. Why is it complaining? Did I hit cancel? I don't think so. Okay, let's just add this one. Now imagine I also want to run an MVC3 site. So what I can do here is I can just go to Web Projects and add an MVC3 application. Then choose a internet application. I'm going to use Razor for this one and of course HTML5. And it sets up a whole MVC3 project. Problem is, MVC3 is not installed on Azure. So what if you want to run your MVC project in Azure? Well, there are a couple of things you could do here. Well, first of all, you could go into your references and take all the special MVC projects and make them deployed. And the way you do that is you just do copy local. And if you set this to true, the deployment package is going to include these assemblies. Or what you could also do is, what I like to do is I create here a little folder. Could call that startup tasks or startup, whatever. And then I'm going to quickly go here to a little directory I have, this one. And then I just take these two files, copy, and paste them into startup. Now, what you see here is the first one, which is just the regular MVC3 installer I downloaded from Microsoft. And I'm going to make that again upload to the cloud. And I'm also creating a little command file here. And this command file just contains instructions telling it, telling it what to do. And I'm asking it, could you please run this executable for me? Do that quietly. And if you have any trouble, just log it to this little file. And then I want you to return. That's it. Yeah, there's some special things here, like this means the deployment directory. But I can now simply go into my website, into my cloud project, and imagine this is the one. I go into my definition, and I can now create a startup task. So in here, I can have a task. What I need to do is I need to give it a couple of things. I need to give it the command line, and I'm going to call that one startup/install mvc.command. And I can then ask it to use maybe elevated security, so I can run it with complete privileges, and I can then choose how I want to run it. And typically what you want to try here is to use simple. This means it is going to run the installer, and it's just going to continue when the installer has finished. If you want to, you can also tell it, start that in the background, and then do the rest while you're at it. You can actually have multiple startup things done if you want in parallel. Okay. So, if I'm going to deploy this now, what you'll see, I'm not going to live deploy this, but what you'll see is, everything's just going to be uploaded, and it's just going to take a little bit longer for this to start running in the cloud. And again, I have a little site here which does that exactly. So here I have an MVC3 site. And if I go to this URI, it should show me an MVC3 site. Now, you don't want to see me deploying this. It takes like 15, 20 minutes. And now the cloud needs to wake up. And then next time, I'm just running here ASP.NET MVC3. You have to take my word for this one. Okay. Now, if you need to do that a lot, if you need to do these steps a lot, it can become quite boring. So what you can also find in Azure is a plugin model to create your own kind of startup tasks, but then quite easily reuse them. And the way you can choose that is by just doing an import in your application, in your cloud. And let me show you what I've done is... let's keep this one for a moment. What I've done is in the Azure SDK, you can find a little folder here which contains plugins. Now, if you want to build your own plugins, it's really easy. What you do is you take one of these folders and you copy-paste them, and then you rename it to whatever you want to call your plugin. And in that plugin, you have to create three things in this one. First thing I need to create is to have this plugin file, which is just an XML file. And what you're doing here is you're starting a startup task. And you can imagine the next thing I'm doing here is exactly the same stuff I did in my startup task. So that's all you need to do. If you want to, you can make your startup task configured by adding more configurations. You can add internal, external endpoints, and even certificates. So you can completely change this. And if you want to look at some more examples, if you look in here, you'll find, for example, the remote access. So I'm going to show you remote desktop in a minute. This is also a plugin. So if you want to use that now, what you do is you just go to your website, like this one. And in here, in the core definition, instead of using the startup task, I can just say, I want you to import for me, and the module name is called MVC3, which is the name of the directory. And that's it. So this way you can make some of these things a lot easier to add. Okay. So, what else? I'm actually nearing what I really like, which is Connect. But before I can show you that, I need to show you remote desktop. So, imagine you have an application running And you want to do some really special things. You want to debug, for example, your startup tasks. Or you forgot to install something. You need to install something temporarily for an experiment or something. What I can do is I can just do remote desktop. And then just work on the machine in the cloud. How easy or how difficult is it to configure this? Well, it is really easy. What you need to do is, in your deployment, you will get a little dialog where you can enable remote desktop. And if you do that, you just need to give it a couple of things. You have to give it one of the management certificates, and you have to give the username and a password. That's it. So what I'm going to do is I have a little project here, this one, and imagine I want to deploy it. So in Visual Studio, I can just publish. And I'm going to ask it to, deploy it using my management certificate in this site and so on. And if you look here, you get this link, configure remote desktop connections. And if I click on it, it's going to show me this window. I just check this checkbox. I select my management certificate again, and I just give it username, password. I also need to give it an expiration date. I made this quite long. I want to use this demo more. That's it. I just hit OK, and I just hit deploy. Now, imagine I deployed the whole thing. Oh, look at this. Imagine I deployed the whole thing. What I'll end up is this thing. So this is the site I just showed you, deployed with remote access enabled. If I want to do remote access, I can just click on this button. And this is going to download for me an RDP file. So I can just click on open. And it's going to log in using remote desktop. So I now need to enter my credentials. Just got the security warning. And then I'm just running here on my machine in the cloud. So what you'll find here is the website that is running. Within here, some stuff from my website. And I can do anything I want. I can change things here. I can go for the computer. I can look at the drives. All those things. Immediately available. So quite cool. But you can do more with this. So let's close this for the moment. What I can also do is I can use Connect. What is Connect? Well, Connect is a system which allows the Azure machines, your instances, to join your machines locally into one network. So how does it work? Well, it sets up an IPsec connection, a good old-fashioned IP connection between the Azure machines and your local machines, tunneling through HTTP. That's how it works. And this way I can connect Azure instances to local machines, local servers, and I can also connect, if I want, my local servers together. Again, using that same IPsec network. And this opens up a whole bunch of interesting capabilities. What I could do here, for example, is I could use the web role and read data from my local database. I might want to not expose very sensitive data by putting it in the cloud. I could just keep it locally. I can then use Azure Connect to connect to my local SQL. Or I could join Azure machines into my domain and use integrated security. Or I could do remote debugging and so on and so on and so on. So let me show you. Well, the Connect site just crashed, so let's quickly reopen that. And just want to show you a little thing. This is a site which has a little connection string here. And if you look at it, you'll find I have an entity framework connection string which is connecting to my local machine. Just connecting to my local machine from within the cloud. So if I run this, and again, I'm not going to deploy the whole thing. Well, I need to show you one thing. If you want to enable Connect, how do you do that? You just go here, go for properties, and then, sorry, I need to go for the role. You go for properties, and then you just check this checkbox. It's that hard. So, let's go and look at the site. It's this one. So, I can run it. With a little bit of luck, this is going to work the first time. Sometimes when it's gone dormant, you get a kind of timeout, and then I need to retry a couple, well, one more time. So I think I'm going to have the timeout now. Well, what this thing is now doing, is actually accessing data from on my little machine here. So, come on. Ah, cool. Works instantly. So this is an application running in the cloud, talking to my machine over Connect. Now this can be quite cool if you integrate this also together with remote desktop. So one of the things I can do here is I can just access my local machine. I can just ping my local machine, and I could now, for example, use a shared folder. So one of the things I like to do is I have a little shared folder on my machine, like this. I have some files in there, and I'm going to copy them locally. Now, I've already done that again to make the demo a little bit faster, but what I did here is I just copied the remote, the debugger from Visual Studio. So I'm going to start it. So now the remote debugger is running in the cloud, and I can close this thing. I can go back for Visual Studio, and then go here, attach to process. And I need to just type in the login name and the machine name from the cloud. And now this is trying to connect to my Azure machine. Now this takes a while. But then I will see all the processes running on that Azure machine, and I can just attach the debugger. Isn't that cool? This is for some of the nastier things that only happen in the cloud. So if you want, you can do remote debugging now. I'm going to keep this running. I'll come back to it in a moment. So all thanks to Azure Connect. Okay. Now, how do you get this up and running? You just need to deploy, but you need to do one other thing. You need to go to your portal, to the management portal, and you'll get this virtual network tab here. And this one allows you to set up groups and roles. What's a role? Well, it's a web role or a work role. That's one part of the Connect. And then you can create a group, and in the group you can just add all your machines. Now, for this to work, you do need to install a local component. So what you do is you click on this thing, and it will install a little service, which you can actually see here, which will show you when you're connected or not. And then the only thing you need to do then after that is to configure the whole thing and set them up. So what I'm going to do here is I can then set up that this role, this customer web role, can connect to the group called local, to the local group called my group, and then it can access my machine here, as you can see. And that's all you need to do. So when you deploy, when you publish into the cloud, you have to enable Azure Connect. You then need to install this little component just once on your machine. And then with this component, you can ask it to go back to Azure, to your account, and then get the policy, which are the machines I can connect to, and then you just have connection. Let's have a quick look at the RDP here. At my Visual Studio. Where is it? This one. Yeah, look. I'm actually now connected to the Azure machine, and I can connect, for example, to the worker process from IIS, and then start debugging my website. I'm not going to show you that because that's even slower. Yeah. Okay. Now, another cool little thing. Anybody hear about IntelliTrace? Well, unfortunately, this is only available with the most expensive edition of Visual Studio. Hopefully, in the next version, they're going to make it part maybe of Professional. But IntelliTrace is a kind of black box for your service. How do you debug the startup code of your service? What if something goes wrong there? Well, one of the things we can also do is we can enable IntelliTrace. And IntelliTrace, think of it as the black box of an airplane. It is going to record all the things that are happening for you. So, I just want to show you this in action. What I'm going to do is I have a project here. This one. And I just deployed it to the cloud. Okay? Now, if I wait here, what I'll see is after a while, if this is crashing in the startup caller, it's going to be appearing here as busy in Visual Studio. So I didn't talk about this, but in Visual Studio, in the Server Explorer, you can connect to compute and then can look at all the things you're deploying and see what their health is. Now, if this is busy and it keeps on busy, it means that there's a problem in startup. So what I can do now is I can download the IntelliTrace log. And this IntelliTrace is going to tell me all about what happened in the cloud. So I can actually debug, it's also called historical debugging because this will allow me to step back into time. So what I get is this iTrace file. And what I see is all the threads running in my role. I see the role initialization thread. I see the role start thread. And I can also see that there was some kind of exception happening here. So what I can now do is I can just hit start debugging. Now don't forget, this is code that crashed in the cloud, not here. But what IntelliTrace is going to show me instantly is where am I in the code, in the cloud, and it tells me there was a problem here. And if you look at this, I forgot to pass this argument, something like that. But what I can also do is I can actually connect to the debugger and even step back into time and see maybe there was a certain path through my code I took which ended up in this misery. So I can actually step back here, historical debugging. So quite cool again if you want to debug startup problems, or you could actually debug actively running services there too. That's IntelliTrace. Okay, what we also get is reporting. This is again fairly fresh from CTP. And what it allows you to do is to just run reports in the cloud. You have a SQL Azure database running in the cloud. You might want to draw reports on that, or you might want to draw reports from a local database. With this thing, I can just build a reporting service, just create a reporting services report, deploy it in the cloud, and then just publish it in the cloud and keep it running in the cloud. It's fairly easy. What I did here is I created a simple report using any kind of report builder you like. So what I'm doing here is I'm using the old one, and I get this RDL file, and I can test it locally and see if it works and just do the usual stuff in building a report. Now, the next thing I need to do is I will need to publish this report. And the big difference is I will need to publish it to reporting services. Now, where can I find that? Again, on the portal, if I go to reporting services, it's going to tell me that I have an account here, this account, and that I'll need to publish my report to this URI. And that's what I'm doing in my report builder. So I can now simply click publish, and it's going to upload to this URI, which I just showed you. Once that is done, I can just run the report. So, again, what I did is I built a simple site. And on the site, I'm using the report viewer control from ASP.NET. I'm just showing the report. Come on. And so if I go here, I should see my report running now in the cloud. So for a developer, if you're familiar with building reporting services reports, this is really easy. You just change the address where it needs to be deployed to, and you just change the reporting view, the report viewer in ASP.NET to point to the cloud instead of to your usual source. So I can just run any report here quite easily in the cloud again. Okay. So, what we also find now is the Windows Phone Toolkit. And it allows you to just make the Windows Phone and the cloud work together quite nicely. Like I said, a phone is available everywhere. The cloud is also available everywhere. So it's kind of a match made in heaven. And what this toolkit does, it gives you all the necessary APIs in C Sharp or VB to store your stuff in the cloud. Blob store, table store, those kind of things. So what I can do with this is I can just create a new project. And if you install this toolkit, what you're going to get is this thing. So what this thing is going to create for me is a new cloud application and a Windows Phone application. And it's going to ask me, hey, where is your storage? Well, I'm going to use the local storage. I'm going to use the storage emulator. And then I'll get a very easy way for building Windows Phone applications and store my data in the cloud. You get a nice sample, so you can run this instantly. Yeah. So what I'm going to try to do is I'm just going to run it. So the whole thing gets packaged now, and it will have to be a little bit patient. Yeah. Now, so I just created a new project, hit run, after making using the emulator. And I already have a rather functioning application. Again, it takes a little while. So, what I'm going to get is two things. Yeah, this is normal, by the way. To do the authentication, it is using a certificate. And this certificate is, of course, a test certificate. So, and that's why IIS is complaining about this, saying, are you really sure you want to do this? Of course I am. So this is going to bring me to a site, and this site is used for this application. To make it easy to talk to table storage and so on. So if I go here, if I start this application, I can now log on, for example. Yeah, and this is really secure. So if I type in my password here, you can quite easily see what I'm typing. And then I can just run the application. And the sample that you can build this way is going to contain access to all your tables. You can have access here to sample data. So I put some courses in here, and I get access to blobs. And if I want to, I can list all the blobs I have here. And for fun, I just put some pictures in here of me at work. So this is me at work, as you can see. Of course, after work, nice hotel. Okay, those kind of things. So it makes it really easy. I customized this little application in a couple of minutes and already had something quite nice. Okay. Which brings me to the latest of the latest stuff in Azure. And to be honest, last week something happened. Amazon lost one of its data centers. A full data center was lost. How that was caused, I don't know, but websites like Foursquare went down because of that. Now, how would you solve something like this? People were saying, yeah, see the cloud? Actually, it is always possible that one data center crashes, but if you have 10, the chance of every data center crashing at the same time is very small. Okay, that would probably be caused by a meteorite hitting the Earth, and then we will be dead anyway. So nobody's going to be there to check if your site is still up. Now, to solve that, by coincidence, 2 weeks ago, Microsoft released the Azure Traffic Manager. And it's a mechanism that allows you to distribute your traffic over many different hosted services. So if you want to protect yourself from the outage of one data center, what you do is you just distribute your site or your service over multiple data centers. And then the traffic manager can then choose for you which data center you want to use. So how does it work? A user wants to visit your website. You're going to make this URI, in this case www.contoso.com, you're going to make that redirect using DNS to your traffic manager. This traffic manager is then going to figure out where to go to, and it's going to use for that load balancing methods. It also uses monitoring to look at all your services which are running, and then using a load balance method, it's going to pick one of the services, and it's going to redirect using DNS back to the user, and then the user is going to talk to your service immediately. This is a very efficient way of working, because once the DNS gets put into the local cache, the user will always be instantly redirected to the same site. So what do you get? You get three different policies: performance-based policy, failover, or round robin. In performance policy, you need to set up monitoring. And the monitoring is used to ping your services from time to time, and this way I can figure out, using a performance table, which one is the fastest one for you. Wherever you are, it's going to look in the performance table, in this location, which data center is the best. So it's then going to look at that, and I could get some timings, and then of course it's going to take the one which is the fastest, and then just redirect it back to the client. So this way you can nicely distribute a worldwide-based website, and then just make everybody redirect to the best data center. Okay. What you also have is a failover policy. So if you have one service, this is the one that where you want everybody to go. But if that fails, what's going to happen? It's just going to take another one. So if this one suddenly fails, it just goes to the next one, and the next one, and the next one. And then, of course, you have round-robin policy. And then you just create your services, and then you're going to be redirected one after the other, one in a nice round-robin fashion. This way you can also distribute traffic. So, the cloud. I think it's an exciting opportunity. So I think we'll need to all prepare for the cloud. One day we're going to see it. It's just a better way of deploying your sites too. If you want to try that, it's fairly easy to try to do a couple of things with Azure completely free. What you want to do is you want to visit this site, Windows Azure Pass, and there you can get a free 30-day pass for Azure. Normally what happens is if you get one of these free things, you still have to give your credit card. If you use too much, you still have to pay. This one not. Okay, so you get a full 30 days to try things. And what you'll need to do is you will need to enter a promo code. And you want to take this promo code. If it doesn't work, I have a couple of others too. So send me an email. So this is probably the easiest way to get started. If you're an MSDN subscriber, it's actually better, because if you're an MSDN subscriber, you get that out of the box. And here, depending on your MSDN subscription, you get a lot of stuff. So if you have like the ultimate one, you get like 30 gigabytes of storage, 5 gigabytes SQL database, all those things. And you don't have to do squat. So, if you want to start developing for it, here's some more URIs where you can find more information. You can find the tools, the SDK tools, the Windows, the Windows Phone SDK. You have to download that from CodePlex. So, if you want to also keep better up to date, you probably saw that one. You can use the MSDN gadget to look at what's happening with MSDN, which are the current events, and so on. So, if you want to look at this session later, again, you will be able to do that on Channel 9. And if there are any questions, I'll be happy to try to answer them, and I'll be at the YouTube booth for the rest of the day. So, questions? Yes? Okay. So the question is, you can connect, you can get data from your local, you can connect to Azure SQL. If you want to get data from Azure SQL, it's just using plain old TDS. So to get data out of SQL Azure is the same thing as getting data out of a local SQL. So whatever you're using, if it can talk TDS, it can talk to SQL Azure. Answer your question? If you want to build something on SQL Azure, it's just the same steps you do. The only big difference is the connection string. That's all. It's the only difference. Any other questions? Then I'm going to wish you a nice coffee break. Don't forget the session after here. It's going to be all about pricing. So it's also for developers, by the way, because I'm going to teach you how to make sure that the price doesn't get out of bounds. Okay. Thank you.